creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
It's Friday, August 10th, 2018, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studios, on the ones and twos, our illustrious producer, my brother, Chandler Strang.
Hello.
It's really weird, just two of us.
Yeah. And we're not in the same room either.
Yeah, it's really, I'm just in a big room by myself. Yeah.
For days like this, I think we need to get a dummy. And just like one of those old crash test dummies that look really lifelike, you know, with like the silicone skin and all, like what Mythbusters uses. And just like to have him in the studio. So you got someone to look at, even if that someone is an inanimate dummy, ballistic dummy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just in a big empty room with a big table looking at a TV screen of all my friends who have left me.
Yeah, if you had a ballistic dummy on ventriloquist strings, would that help?
Yes.
I feel like that's a legit question. Chandler, make a note for Mark and the finance team that we need to bookmark some funds to get a very lifelike dummy in the studio.
I like it.
Thanks.
I like
just make the note.
On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
Joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, Tyler Huckabee.
Howdy, y'all.
And from a mile away from Tyler Huckabee, hey, there in Nashville, author, speaker, podcaster, Annie F. Downs.
Good morning, gents. Happy Friday.
Still can't figure out why you guys haven't just gotten together for coffee or something.
You don't know. You don't know when we've hung out. You're making a ton of assumptions about our friendship.
We just got done with brunch. We had a lovely brunch just at the halfway point.
Yeah, we just met there and we pulled sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches out of our bags and stood on the highway and ate them. It was adorable. It was a great friendship moment.
Super late. Hey, Cameron, I had one other benefit of having a ballistics dummy right there in the studio next to you. You've seen Mythbusters. You know the material I'm talking about. Yeah. It's very lifelike. It's very fleshy.
You can drop it off a
fleshy
skyscraper.
It looks
gross. You can light it on fire. you can shoot it.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be very satisfying? Maybe I'm just sick. Okay. And I will say that. I will preface what I'm about to say. But if you, Cameron, if you get really frustrated at something, just go punch that ballistic dummy as hard as you can right in the stomach. But like, boom. Like that's really satisfying, fleshy. You know, I feel like if we all had ballistic dummies just lying around that we could occasionally maybe open-handed slap.
Do you? I actually have a legitimate question right now because we're all
very therapeutic.
It'd be very therapeutic.
Very different personality types in this podcast. I have a real question for you. When you get frustrated, do you need to like punch a wall or something? Does it build up and like explode in you? Like, does that help you feel better if you were to hit a dummy?
As you guys know, you guys are all aware of my temperament, and usually I'm pretty even keel, and when something bad happens, I just squish it down into a tiny, tiny ball on the inside. Every once in a while, the pressure just, it's like an episode of Dr. Pimple Popper. I don't know if you guys are watching the new hit show. It comes to the surface, and it is violent, irrational, and it involves me spending about $2,400 on a very lifelike silicone ballistics dummy who occasionally receives my wrath.
When I get really frustrated and it's like built up, I just send very long emails. That's that, and then I feel better.
Oh, we know.
Wait, I haven't got one yet. What do you mean? Do you?
I'll forward you a couple. I'm just kidding. Yeah. See, Annie, I get them, and then I go punch my ballistic dummy before replying.
You know that wise thing that they say, that those emails that occur to you at 2 a.m. And you want to address it, and like write it, but don't put the 2 in there, and like just look at it in the morning. Yeah. I don't do that. I don't look at it in the morning. I just figure, it's a true and authentic
experience. I'll sleep better getting this off my chest. But Cameron, if you had a silicone dummy that you could just give a hearty slap to the face at 2 in the morning.
No, that's not.
I feel like that.
No, and also Cameron, you should not send those emails in the middle of the night. Everyone knows.
I know. Yeah.
And angry emails, emails to exes, emails to family members you're unhappy with. You don't send any of those.
Tyler doesn't even read them.
I figure he couldn't have meant it. It was 2 in the morning. He's probably typing an email, so I don't get it.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, real talk, real quick. Are you guys watching Dr. Pimple
yes,
Popper?
Yes, I've watched
the new show.
What is that?
No.
Oh man, I can't turn away. It's horrible and disgusting. And it's like not something I think would appeal to me, but I can't help. Like I watched like 3 hours last night. And I'm like, there's something wrong with me. There is something wrong with society that this is like the new hit show.
It's what I think it is. It's a dermatologist who literally is like,
yeah. Yes. So she had like a super popular Instagram account where it would just be videos of her like
lancing gigantic. And it's so gross.
Yeah.
Cameron.
And the Instagram account got so popular that TLC gave her a new show because I mean, there is evidently some learning that can go on while you're, you know, like I learned all about cysts last night.
Oh, because TLC used to stand for the learning channel. So that's right. Okay.
And gotcha. it's still learning.
We're going to have to tag this as explicit. Yeah. You can't have kids listening to this conversation. This is too gross.
It's super gross.
I don't
want
to listen to this
right.
conversation. I'm a grown man.
Okay. I'm just saying, I'm commenting on pop culture. It's a big show right
Literally,
now.
Literally, pop culture.
Pop culture. Yeah. Cameron, well done. High fives across
the
state.
Annie, what do you do when you've got like, when that frustration builds up? Assuming you don't, maybe you do, I don't know, maybe you do slap like a crash test dummy.
Intern.
No, not humans.
She is an intern for that.
I probably lean toward, well, I probably almost always cry because I just, when I cry when I'm mad, which is infuriating when you're like unhappy with a work situation because it's hard for me to like, I have to like dry it up. Yeah. But I probably, I mean, Cameron and I are built very similar. I write those middle of the night emails. I just have wisdom and I don't send them.
They're in the drafts.
They're in the drafts. Yeah. And then the next morning I go, oh, I am so glad I didn't send that guy that email because
all the emails in the draft folder that you have addressed to me, go ahead and send them. Let's get it off the chest. Yeah, what
just,
I do,
just
guys.
See, there's nine. Absolutely nine of
just
them.
Just DEFCON 5. Just like go. All
see,
drafts,
I would never,
release.
I would never resort to actual violence. That's why it's a silicone dummy. But I will say I would probably result to vandalism. Sometimes I'm like, I'm so riled up right now. You know how good it would feel to smash up a very intricately built birdhouse. It would feel fantastic. Just obliterate that thing.
What about you, Huck? What do you do?
It's like a flash dance type situation. I just take to the streets.
You go down to the old abandoned warehouse on the edge of town, put the boombox on, and just dance it off.
Spinning, line dancing. It's Robert's Western.
Yeah, it's Nashville,
world.
So it's like a line dance. It's not. It's not as exciting.
At one point, you jump on old like meat hanging hooks and do like a parallel ring bar routine. It's pretty impressive.
It's exciting. I'm not good at it, so I end up in the hospital, and then I'm just mad again because it's expensive. So it's sort of the curse.
If Huckabee had a dollar for every time he's been inadvertently impaled by an old meat hook at the meatpacking warehouse on the edge of town while dancing off some frustration, he'd be a very rich man.
Oh, that's super gross.
I mean, full disclosure, I mean, you guys should be aware, we are recording this on a Thursday I traveled all last week, came back exhausted, was sick on Monday, and then we're on magazine deadline. Monday night, Tuesday night, and last night, 3 hours sleep. And I'm because we're working through the night. I am on fumes right now. So I apologize in advance because I've read my emails that I send in this state and I'm not mean. I'm just curt, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Blunt. I would imagine that's true. Yeah. You're just, well, I mean, if you're actually an Enneagram 7, like you say you are, when things get bad, we go toward being a 1, which is a perfectionist where the sentence in our head is, fine, if no one else is going to take care of it, I'll take care of it. Yeah. Fine, I'll just take care of it. So I'm going to send out that email because I got to take care of it. I'm going to do this because I got to take care. I'm going to stay up all night because I got to take care of this because no one else does.
Well, I mean, I'm not frustrated. I mean, listen, I'm the last step before an issue goes to the printer. I mean, it is literally just, I was doing my job. We just had some really busy days and I haven't been able to do it at the office. So, you know, I just got to, you know, we want to always, you know, details matter and we want to strive for excellence in everything we do. And I'm not going to like, just because I had other stuff going on, you know, just kind of like phone it in. So I'm going to put the hours in. It's just they've been going until 3:30 in the morning.
I feel like you're trying to prepare us for a conversation, a post-podcast conversation.
Thank you. No
this is making me real nervous.
No kidding. He's like massaging something
here. I pinned an email.
Thursday's my off email day anyway, so I don't care.
Yeah, I'm not checking my email the rest of this week.
Yeah. But Karen, here's what I think. Just picture in your mind karate chopping a dollhouse made of popsicle sticks. How great would that feel? Just gah! Would feel great.
Would you really? Would you pick? I would pick stomping on it over karate chopping.
You know what they have in my? They opened near right down the street from my house. I haven't been yet. It's called a smash room or something like that, and it's a room full of like vases and like a grandfather clock and like old wood made instruments.
How is this sustainable?
No. So it's filled with all that junk, and you can pay, and you can, they'll gear you up in like a face mask. So like shards of things don't hit you in the face, and you go and smash it with a baseball bat. And literally you pay like $30 a session and just go smash up. They just open one.
Where did they get all the stuff to?
What's the sustainability? Yeah, I'm with Tyler. How is there? How
I mean,
is
you could probably get a lot of stuff at like Goodwill for like 50 cents. You know?
For like 3 weeks.
Yeah, but if you're paying, I don't know I don't know the economics of it. I'm just saying they open it down the street. I'm not. I haven't looked at their books.
Sounds like a movie pass type business plan. Like it's not. This isn't.
It's not really.
Yeah, sounds great. It's not going to work.
And I don't know how the business is doing. I haven't visited. I haven't visited, but I'll be honest. I thought just it'd be fun to do. My cousin had a great business idea that I've always, you know, it was before Topgolf came around, which is like a driving range, essentially big targets out there, that it would be a driving range with like a big china cabinet filled with stuff. It would have a grandfather clock. There would be a whole lamp section of the driving range.
Oh, sure.
Like a whole porcelain doll section. You just go out there and whack golf balls and stuff. That'd be really fun to hit with a golf
ball. Now, that would make me want to play golf. There's not a lot that makes me want to play golf, but that would make, I would learn really so fun. That I could aim at things that would really shatter. Fun. That's hysterical. Yeah.
Being able to walk around outside all day in capris, that doesn't make you want to play golf?
old tube TVs, like old big computer monitors. How fun would that be? Just a smack of the golf ball.
That sounds way more fun. I mean, I wouldn't mind driving a cart around. I just don't find golf to be incredibly fun, but I'm in it if I need to be.
Yeah, golf's kind of lame.
I've never played an actual game. I've never played an actual game of golf.
Nor have
You're
I.
not missing never anything. I mean, just I, imagine being like 4.5 hours sweating.
No.
Being frustrated.
In college, I took as our PE course in college, because every semester we had to take a PE course. For 2 years, 4 semesters, I took golf. And it was like taught by the golf team and the coaches and stuff. It was great. And I bought clubs all in. I've played once in the last 20 years. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I got it good enough to go, okay, I get it. And then I just moved on, you know, so I don't know.
I was actually, let me preface it by the golf team needed to field a team and there was no tryout. But I was still on the golf team in high school, even though there was no tryout, because because in order to practice, it takes so long, you get out of school early, especially for tournaments, because you got to play in the daylight, you know? So I was like, dude, I'm going to miss a ton of school. This is going to be awesome. And I was humiliated repeatedly. I promise this is true. I got to a tournament and there was a kid named, it's all the schools. And there was someone who was very, very small and very, very young. And he looked kind of sickly. And his name was Teddy. And I was like, I'm going to get matched up with Teddy. And sure enough, we got paired up and Teddy destroyed me. Just
really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was horrible. I finished in dead last in every tournament, but I didn't care.
Hey, somebody has to.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I gave Teddy a good memory.
The guys who didn't finish dead last were so grateful you were there.
Exactly. You made everybody else feel better about themselves, which is what you do here on the podcast.
That's true, Jesse.
Hey, coming up later on the show today, we have worship leader Chris McClarney joins us. He has a great new album out. I love him. I saw him perform last year at the Jesus Culture Conference in Sacramento, and actually they recorded his last album that night. It was unreal. I had never heard him before that. And,
he's incredible.
I'm a huge fan.
I was actually listening to the album this morning, and it's unbelievable.
Jesse, have you made friends with him yet? Because he's one of the funnier. Like he's incredibly funny. He's an Enneagram 7. He likes to pull pranks.
I'll put him on my list of people to befriend.
Yes, I need you to force him into friendship as I do.
But you don't understand about Jesse's bedroom is when he says a list of people to befriend, it's an entire wall, and he has photos that he's taken, you know, in secrecy, and he like ties strings around. And he's connecting. Yeah. He has a plan to befriend all these people.
Oh yeah, find their favorites. I find out where they eat. Yeah. I have one of those big telephoto lenses, and I hide in the shrubs outside their homes to see when they leave and enter work. You know, I have to manufacture an encounter, but it's a flawless plan.
It is. It's worked with Ira Glass, so there you go.
Yeah
exactly.
Hey, before we move the show along, if you heard Wednesday's episode, we talked for a while about what happened at Willow Creek on Sunday and the ensuing days. We recorded that show earlier in the week. Obviously, Wednesday night, Willow announced having a family meeting where they addressed the situation from the pulpit. And that happened last night. So I just wanted to tee this up and kind of update our listeners, since we spent so much time of the last show talking about the situation. One of the elders addressed the congregation, you know, basically representing the entire elder board. It admitted, you know, apologized for everything, admitted that they handled it completely wrong. And then they announced that the entire elder board and the lead pastor, Heather Larson, will be stepping down as well, joining Steve Carter. So the entire leadership of Willow has stepped down.
Well,
as
and I think a better way, let me edit you. I don't know that they're joining Steve Carter. I think Steve Carter stepped away when he found it, felt it was right to step away. And they also made that decision for themselves.
Well, I just didn't want, if somebody didn't hear last episode, to think that Steve Carter was still on staff. I'm saying Steve's already gone. He did that on Sunday, and then they are now. So, I mean, there was really, it's an incredibly sad situation, obviously, for the victims and just, you know, the body of Christ in general. It's such an influential church that Willow Creek has been over the last 35, 40 years. But, you know, there was nothing else they could do. I mean, they had to step down. And hopefully, you know, I'll be praying for Willow Creek. I hope you all join us in doing that, and that, you know, God's not surprised by anything. And, you know, I believe that God is directing somebody's steps, a new leadership team, to lead that congregation. It's to a new season of thriving and you know, global impact, and that, you know, it'll be a healing season for them. You know, it's a big building in suburban Chicago, and, it'd be awful if Willow Creek, you know, kind of went away because of all this.
You know, and I'll tell you that last Wednesday night when I was watching the live stream and watching Heather and watching the elders, the elder who spoke on behalf of the elders, it was absolutely heartbreaking. But I love that they said the women's, the victims' names, like specifically apologized to the specific women. I thought that was huge and really beautiful. And while it is very heartbreaking, and I think I said this to y'all last night, or I think I said this to y'all Wednesday night when we were texting about it, this may be the first time I've had real hope that when people do the hard thing, but it's the right thing, something grows there.
That's what I'm saying.
And I think Willow Creek could come out of this with a really beautiful, painful, scarred up story, and show up on the other side. I'm excited to see who the leadership finds. Because right now, I mean, it's just one of those things to think about. Right now, somewhere, someone is pastoring a church, and they are who God has picked to lead Willow Creek next. And I don't know. I just think it's kind of a beautiful thought that they may not even know yet what God has for them. And
the only thing at all comparable to this that I can think of, and I don't think it's comparable, it's a rough analogy, but it's what happened at Mars Hill a couple of years ago when Mark Driscoll had to step aside. And obviously we know about the sad story. Mars Hill doesn't really exist in any
it totally way folded anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't at all, right?
Right, no,
it doesn't. But
somebody said the sister churches like just became like independent and, you know,
and still exist.
Disassociate.
But Willow, but they did not take as drastic steps to reform as Willow is taking here, I don't think. It was definitely desperate times, and it was definitely better. I guess if ever the phrase better late than never applies, it applies here. So, yeah, I would hate to see something with that amazing of a legacy go down. I'd love to see a really good story come out of this, like you said, Annie.
Y'all know we all are major team Steve Carter people and just love him. But also, I think there's just so much courage it took for the elders and for Heather to apologize, to call a mistake, and to step out of the way. I just honor them for not for everything, but I honor them for this, for how they handled stepping away.
And it was, I'm sure, very difficult for them to call Bill Hybels himself to join them and apologize too. That was very bold, and I obviously hope that he heeds that call, but that was a brave thing to do, and I appreciated it.
All right, well, you know what? On that note, let's take a break and come back and do slices. You're listening to Patrick Droney. The song is Brooklyn. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard Arizona, who we were talking about in Wednesday's show, with the new single, What She Wants. Well, this week's episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hey, hiring used to be hard with multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, and a confusing review process. I can tell you from experience that is true. But today, hiring can be easy. And you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/relevant. ZipRecruiter sends your job opening to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. It's so effective that 80% of employers get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. I actually can attest to that. We've used ZipRecruiter and we have found good people.
Yeah, I know. I love companies like ZipRecruiter disrupting a model. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like finding a new way to fill a big need with, you know, a really cool intuitive tool and interface.
Right now, Relevant Podcast listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/relevant. That's ZipRecruiter.com/relevant. ZipRecruiter.com/relevant. You know, if I say it three times, you remember it.
I have it tattooed on my mind now.
ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, it's time for slices. What do you have, Jesse?
Okay, so we're on a very tight schedule today. I understand that. I'm going to go to the dentist.
We really are on a tight schedule.
Okay, yeah. And I'm going to do a twofer, but I'm going to keep them both very short. But you have to tell me, I'm going to take a quick vote. Chandler, you're the decider today, right, okay? Right. The stories you have to choose from is an alien signal detected from outer space.
Uh-oh.
Wild goats taking over the neighborhood, or a church that plans to build a brewery. Pick two of the three, go.
Oh man, that's hard. I'll go with the last two.
No, I want to know about the alien.
Same. Don't listen to him. I care way more. The church building a brewery is like,
and it's controversial. Who cares? Okay.
Yeah, duh. Of course.
Terrible choice, Chandler. Terrible. Okay, sorry, you were tested and failed.
And you failed.
And I will say this. I tried to get the science mic button going, but it's been radio silent. I can only assume he's been abducted by aliens. that's the outcome of the slide. So a very large telescope in Canada has detected a mysterious signal that they have no idea what it is. So it's the lowest frequency signal ever received by a telescope, and scientists have a lot of theories that what could be causing it. But at this point, it's all just theories. Now, how this comes in is like, you guys remember the movie Contact, based on the Carl Sagan book?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Tower.
With Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
And it takes place at SETI, which is, the Intelligent Life Institute or something like that. But they have like these massive satellites that are always on, and they're always detecting signatures from outer space. Now, I remember in the movie, one night they start getting these big blips that are unlike anything they've ever received. That's essentially what happened at this Canadian telescope in Canada that is scanning the skies for weird signals. It's led some to theorize that this could, be a very significant outlier, because these are radio bursts of radio waves that have never been observed, and no one knows, even the brightest minds and scientists in science have any idea what causes them. Here's the last line of the AP story. It says they could not rule out the possibility that this is a high-powered signal from a very advanced alien civilization. Ladies and gentlemen, this could be one of the biggest stories in human history. We could be trying to be contacted right here, right now. And so no one knows what it is. We'll have to keep you updated. If I get anything from Science Mike, offer some clarity, I'll let you know. But
that's insane.
But right now, they don't know what this is. They didn't even know that they could receive frequencies at this low in these type of bursts. They didn't even know that was possible to receive from space. So they're not like freaking out,
there's aliens. I really have always hoped that.
Really?
Yes, I don't want them to eat us or kill us. I just want there to be other things. I want all this to be something.
Yeah,
it's probably not good.
Statistically speaking, there's something else out there. It's just we haven't.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some life out there. I don't know.
They haven't found us. Why is it on us to find them?
Well, that's actually a really great point.
Maybe they have, Tyler. Maybe
we're busy. We got a lot going on Earth.
Maybe they found us a long time ago.
I mean, are we sending? So that makes me ask the question: are we sending out blips like that across the space?
We send out. Not only are we sending out things intentionally, we've been sending out things unintentionally. So, okay. So, when you turn
things unintentionally,
if you're on the radio is radio waves, right? And so right now, the first thing, let's say the first thing, if you're an alien and you're receiving incoming signals, it would be from the German Olympics or something. I think that was the first thing broadcast on an air frequency. So that's the last thing out, the first thing that left Earth. So that'd be the first thing you see. But Carl Sagan, the guy who wrote Contact, actually, he blasted off into space this capsule, this container that has imprinted in gold, because gold's very durable in space. Things that talk about humanity, including songs that could be played could be interpreted in a sort of physical form, a record player.
There's a Blind Willie Johnson album in there. It's true. He did it. He picked his favorite things and sent them off into space as the best representation of what humanity can offer.
Yeah. Why have I never fallen? This is what I'm going to do on vacation, is I'm just going to fall down the rabbit hole of what we've sent to space to try to talk to aliens.
Right now, off the dome, you're sending something into space. It's got to be the best single thing that humanity's created. Yeah. The aliens are going to find it. It's going to dissuade them from coming to attack. But anything.
It would never last, but I would send a Coke Icy and Mumford & Sons Sigh No More. That's the two things I would send. I'm like, let me tell you why you want to come to this planet.
We're doomed.
These two things. Sigh No More, Coke Icy.
What would happen is they would drink the Coke Icy and then they would listen to the Mumford & Sons. And as soon as they hear the Mumford & Sons, they'd be like, activate the laser beams. We must rid this threat from the universe. Yeah. No.
What would you say?
Turn your phasers off. Stun.
I mean, literally. I honestly, the most important thing humanity's ever created in my mind is the Bible.
He would send that.
Oh, that's powerful.
Yeah, Cameron, preach.
They might have sent a Bible. They sent a couple to the moon. One of which got brought back, and they just auctioned off the. Which we posted about recently. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the second story. So a bunch of people in a suburban neighborhood in Boise, Ohio, woke up the other day. And when they woke up, everyone, was getting ready for work, and they looked out the windows, and hundreds of goats were wandering the neighborhood, eating everything in sight.
Yeah.
So they get up, people start taking pictures. They have no idea where these goats came from. So just imagine waking up and there is a herd of goats walking down your street, eating all the bushes, eating all the grass.
100 feels like more than a herd, right?
It was like 120 something goats just wandering this neighborhood. So no one knows where they came from. No one knows what to do. And so they call animal control and they say, hey, there's a bunch of goats in the neighborhood. Evidently, this neighborhood in Boise doesn't have that much of a wildlife problem, because they only brought one truck to take care of the problem. And quickly realized that they were overwhelmed and they had no solution to what to do with these goats. And at this point, no one knew still where they came from. So animal control shows up and was able to get a couple of them. But I mean, it's going to take them 50 trips to round up all these goats. Meanwhile, the goats are terrorizing the neighborhood. Eventually,
adorably.
In like a goat
way. Walking around.
I'll say this.
If you're like a rose bush, you're getting terrorized. If you're casually walking down the street, you're like, oh cool, there's a bunch of goats out there.
You're a rose bush.
Is there a farm nearby? I mean, like, where did they come from?
Okay, so but people's I'll get to the bottom of the mystery soon. But it's not before people in the neighborhood started taking pictures and tweeting about it, with tweets and images including "the revolution is starting." Goats are on the lamb. you who've goat to be kidding me. So Twitter was overtaken by this. Eventually, the owner of a business called We Rent Goats went looking for his herd of goats, which were feeding on a nearby pond, and realized every single one of them escaped.
We rent goats.
Yeah, we rent goats. It's essentially what they do.
It's a natural lawn care service, yeah, right? Exactly. Instead of mowing, you just send goats out to eat it.
So this is a thing now. This is a thing. And I first became aware of this on a very Cavallari, Kristen Cavallari and Jay Cutler's reality show, where as a prank, someone got Jay Cutler goats. Yeah. And right there in Nash Vegas.
Yeah.
But evidently they market it as like an eco-friendly way to cut your grass. Yeah, where, you know, you're not firing up a lawnmower. You're not using gasoline and it's not loud. And what they do is a goat herder will come over with like five goats and just let them hang out in your yard for like an hour. He'll keep them in the yard and they eat all the grass.
Sometimes they can't. Presumably.
You're not going to get those fresh, clean lines you get with grass cutting.
No. I mean, unless you are. I don't know.
Unless you're really good at goat herding. Like a unless really talented goat herder.
If you're paying extra for the goats that move in lines.
It's a business that anyone can go in Boise, and they're popping up all over. Like I said, Tyler, I know they're there in Nashville.
I might do it.
But you can rent goats to cut your lawn. But the problem is the property owners of like a natural pond nearby had ordered it, and he was like, "This is a big job. I'm going to need like 120 of these things." It's not clear how he let them go. I'm assuming he fell asleep on the job. This happened early morning, so I think he's like, "I'll take the overnight shift," and just dozed off. Woke up at the pond, and all the goats are gone. And that's when he realized he has a problem on his hand. But anyway, the We Rent Goat guys was go. He's able to herd his goats back. But for briefly, it looked like the goat revolution of taking over humanity had begun. Both of these are scary stories today. Both of these. But if the aliens do come, I hope they come when the goats have taken over a neighborhood. Here's why. Because they're going to be like, okay, we have to take over this planet. We got to take down the top species. They come down and they land in Boise. They're like, well, obviously the top species here is goats. Let's take out the goats and humans are fine. You know, so it could be synchronous.
I don't want them to take. Goats are great. I grew up with goats.
We had goats at my house. Because
goats are great, but I like humans better.
Right. But like as a kid, we had to have someone eat the kudzu and it wasn't going to be us. So we needed goats. They had to eat all the kudzu.
I don't know what kudzu is.
What? You don't know what kudzu is?
Kudzu is killing Georgia.
Yeah.
It's an invasive.
It's like the invasive vines.
Yeah.
It was imported from Japan and went wild. There's no natural predator to it or whatever in Georgia, and it has taken over. It grows incredibly fast. It'll take over a tree, suffocate it, and kill a forest.
That's right. It's
like the iguanas in South Florida.
Yeah, so we, on right. our property where I grew up, was like 18 acres in a pond in a farm kind of thing. And so we had to have a bunch of goats to eat all the kudzu so it wouldn't take over.
There you go.
Farm life with Annie F.
All right, Annie, what do you have? A kudzu update this week?
Kudzu Watch 2018.
Yeah, aliens come. Take our goats and our kudzu. Yeah, you can have them the both and take them to your home planet.
What if that's what we should send to space? Kudzu. See what happens.
Yeah, kudzu.
All of it.
Well, it'll conquer other lands.
Yeah, we don't need to send it all. We need some, like, kudzu. A leaf and it takes over.
Yeah. All right. What do you have, Amy?
Okay. So I thought this, I'm disappointed a little bit because I thought I had found an actual slice about you guys at Bonnaroo. No, not Bonnaroo. Where were you?
Lollapalooza.
And I know what the slice is, and Annie, we're going to move on to Tyler because that is a very mean thing to say.
I know what the headline of this story is.
Tyler, what do you got, man?
This is so weird.
I don't know this. I'm on pins and needles.
My friends in this article, but it isn't. The longer I read it, happened in Germany, but...
I'm so mad at your joke, I am going to go slap Buster right now.
So these two senior citizen men disappeared from their retirement home and were found at a music festival.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So this happened in Germany last week. They literally disappeared. Nobody knew it. The nursing home alerted the police, who discovered the elderly men were missing from the home, and they were found the next morning, 25 miles away at what is considered the largest heavy metal gathering in the world. And even after they were located and taken to like the medical tent, it said they were a little disoriented, but they were having a great time and didn't want to leave.
I love this. This is a great story.
I picture the people at the retirement home, like knocking on the door, breakfast. And they're like, no one's answering. What are we going to do? And they find like a bunch of sheets like knotted together in a rope going out the window. And like some guy liner near the mirror in the bathroom. They're like, I think I know where they went. I think I know what's happening.
Everybody, we know exactly where they went.
I see. There's a bunch of receipts from Hot Topic. They're going to the heavy metal festival. Go.
I admire what they went through here. I am a little disappointed there wasn't like a Ferris Bueller situation where they had rigged up a dummy in the beds to keep it, like giving themselves a little bit longer, buy themselves a little more time.
This feels like a movie that sets. Like Will Ferrell, like the guys from Will Ferrell's movies, like the one about the race car, Talladega.
Like a Robert De Niro, you old know, school. We need some crusty old guys.
Essentially old school.
Yeah. It feels like a great Martin movie. Sheen. I would watch it. I think it'd be funny to watch two really old guys.
Me and Jesse can just vlog next year when we go to Lala. You know?
Yeah.
All right. What do you have, Tyler?
All right. So I'd be surprised if this didn't cross your radar at some point because it was big news. But I feel like we're still all sort of unpacking this a little bit. And I respect y'all's opinions. I want to hear your thoughts on all of this.
What kind of you to say?
Did you see the news about the Academy's new announcements about how the Oscars are changing this year?
This is so weird.
I have not. What's going on?
Okay, this is going to prepare yourself, Cameron, because this blew my mind and they're making three changes. I'm going to read them to you, I think, in ascending order of how crazy and, in my opinion, bad they all are. So the first thing they're going to change, and this is the least crazy, although I don't think it's a great idea, earlier air date. They're going to air the first week of February instead of the last weekend in February. Not that big of a deal, except for a lot of places, they don't even get these movies until later on in February. For outside of like New York, LA, a lot of places in the coast won't be able to see a lot of the Best Picture nominees.
Did they say
until later.
Why they're doing that? Because that seems unnecessary. Why are they doing that?
No stated reason for any of these changes. Although I think we can sort of guess on
the last
a few
one,
of
I'm
them.
Assuming.
The next one is they're cutting it down to a hard 3-hour time limit. 3-hour Oscars telecast, which would make sense, except for in order to achieve that, they're going to air most of the awards during the commercials. So we're not even going to see the award presentation and they're going to edit those and then release those later if you want to see it. But I assume the technical awards, the sound, the design, the visual editing, those things we're not going to see, even though for people like me, I kind of like seeing those awards. I think it's cool to see how the people who never thought they were going to get an Oscar get one instead of just the big ones.
Tyler, I would say you are alone in that. No one cares about that. these sound like improvements to me. Let's cut to the big one.
To the big one. New category.
I mean, you really don't need to tune in until 10 p.m. I mean, that's the truth. Yeah. I mean, the first 2 hours.
Especially
like
with this new
couple
category.
Songs and dances and a bunch of technical awards.
And I don't want to see, I don't watch the Oscars for the bits for the host segments because I think they're usually not that funny.
It's
kind of lame.
Right after,
You can catch the highlights on YouTube. The last one is the new category. And I'm just going to read it to you as the Academy put it in their letter. We'll be creating a new category for outstanding achievement in popular film.
Like blockbusters and comedies and stuff
The
Rock movies. Like The Rock will never get an Oscar, but now he will.
Exactly.
A lot of people
Black Panther isn't going to be Best Picture nominee, but it can be the best. It can be an achievement in popular
films. Which is totally. And here's some of the feedback
I've
seen.
I don't know why you don't like it.
Why shouldn't a lot of people are saying this was made specifically this year for Black Panther. But why shouldn't Black Panther? Because it's a Marvel movie and it's a comic book movie. And so in a lot of people's mind, that automatically makes it not qualify for Best Picture. They don't nominate movies Best Picture.
I mean, as just I'm not a film buff the way you and maybe Tyler Daswick are. I just watch movies. And I got to be honest with you, it's impossible to evaluate a drama what was the one with Winston Churchill, that one.
Yeah.
And then compare that to is that better or worse than Black Panther? Or is that better or worse than this comedy or musical? I mean, they're totally different things. And to me, the summer movies that made August kind of release slate is a totally different genre that you can't put against pedigree type art, you know, and best picture and stuff like that. And to honor or at least acknowledge the popularity and the quality, and this is good for what they were trying to do. This is excellent for what their goals they were trying. They're just different goals. I think it's fine.
It feels like a ghetto to me. It feels like they're creating a, like, it's the Academy saying, I guess you, the like hoi polloi gets to have their movies. If the masses, like if the riffraff and rabble think that, what, like Infinity War or Mission Impossible Fallout, if they like that one, then we can give it a little pat on the head with our achievement.
Because it's still not best picture. It's still not best picture. It's best picture with an asterisk.
Obviously maybe in the next 5 years, there will be a film that transcends and wins both categories, you know, but I mean, you know, I think the biggest criticism of the Oscars as it's happening, because the three of us are wildly active in our Twitter feeds during the Oscars, is that, you know, it's like out of touch with what America is enjoying. And if you look back at past Oscar winners, there's actually no representation of what the biggest and best movies of the year actually were. Here's a way that they're trying to course correct. And maybe there can be a Venn diagram year where it wins both categories, like several movies sweep several categories. But, you know, like I don't mind it. I mean, like, maybe The Rock won't win an Oscar, but I like the idea that like Infinity War could actually like be recognized by the Academy now. Yeah.
What would the criteria be? What is a popular movie versus what is a real contender?
Yeah,
for?
That's the other thing. They haven't really outlined it. If it comes down to budget, if it comes down to like, if it was like a big hit, but I feel like,
well, hold on. Okay. So like you in design, you would see the difference between fine art and, you know, the art that they sell at Target from, you know, Joanna Gaines. That's really good and it's popular and it's like excellent and it's current and whatever, but it's not fine art. It's a totally different evaluation process.
Yeah, well, but I think that's a fair point, but I think that also points to perceptions about fine art. Like, you know, like if the average person were to go into a fine art gallery that had like, you know, really experimental but highly acclaimed works of contemporary art, and someone put something like a fancy piece of driftwood from Pier 1 and switch the tags, the average person might not know which one is the fine art and which one is consumer art or consumer decor.
But a true critic, which is what the Academy is supposed to be, do know. They do know the difference between what is art and what is design.
I think some people would say, like, what happens when that line gets really blurry?
Well, then they win both categories. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
well, like, yeah, but Titanic, which won Best Picture a few years ago. That it's a very expensive movie, made a ton of money. It's very popular. Also won Best Picture. You could say the same thing about Return of the King, maybe Best Picture winner. Amadeus, really expensive, prestigious, Gladiator. Yeah. That's where the lines get blurry, because these are both very popular. They make a lot of money. They're a high budget, and they're also just critically very well done.
And then, but you know, then, you know, when the Star Wars franchise came back and it was incredibly well received and incredibly popular and unanimously critically acclaimed and all that, I mean, it would be never considered for Best Picture. Yeah. This would be a category that you could acknowledge, like, that was an excellent Star Wars movie. You know, I mean,
yeah, like, I think part of the issue is like, no matter how good that star, like The Last Jedi or whatever was, it would automatically be disqualified for being the best picture before it's even released, because it's part of, you know,
it's a franchise.
Property,
it's a franchise. Yeah, I agree.
You
know?
And so I think that's the point that some people are making, is like, should that be a separate category, or should something be disqualified just because it's, you know, a franchise, you know?
But like, you can't, in my opinion, you can't hold up a Star Wars, excellent Star Wars movie against an excellent Daniel Day-Lewis movie and evaluate them in the same category. And to me, Daniel Day-Lewis is making timeless art. Star Wars is making not necessarily as timeless. You know, I don't know. Yeah. It's just a different lane.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we're getting close to circling one of the controversies that is coming out of this, which is that reportedly these decisions came down from the very top. The top being ABC, which is owned by Disney. Disney, who stands the most to gain from having a popular movie category, because they own Lucasfilm and Marvel.
Yeah,
so that gets a little.
Well, and the other thing too is like, And again, Cameron, I think all your points are valid, but there is a degree of out of touchness with the Academy's choices. Like, look at The Artist. I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, the black and white musical about Hollywood's golden era. I feel like pretty universally right now, that seems like an absurd choice to win Best Picture, because even the people who saw it was like, yeah, it's okay. But it was almost like the Academy making a point to say, we are better than the populace and we know better. And we deem this movie, a movie that nobody cares about anymore. You know, like it came and went and made no lasting impact on culture. And it was right. almost like kind of them thumbing their nose at moviegoers, the ones who support the whole industry, saying we know better than you, even if that decision now looks ridiculous.
I mean, to me, now you're actually just getting into what is the purpose of this? Is because like the same could be said in other formats of artistic endeavors. I mean, like what critics of fine art would be very enamored by, and then you put it in front of like Americans, you know, like just like, you know, what do you think of this piece of art? And they just don't get it. You know, like, I mean, you're kind of wondering like, well, who's right, who's wrong? Neither. I mean, but what is the purpose of it? Is it critical evaluation of art, or is this a good and popular movie that represents the time we're in and the tastes of the public? I don't think the Academy would say that they're trying to represent the tastes of the public, that they actually are trying to look deeper at cinema as an art form, you know, like.
But I wonder, like, who, as somebody who I like the Oscars a lot, I look forward, I'm glad we're getting into Oscar season. I obviously love Marvel movies a lot. I've never felt the need to have Marvel represented in the Oscars, because I know that it's not they're not prestige movies, and I don't really care that they're not going to be. I think occasionally they get close to it. I think the big question around what should the Best Picture be, or what should it look like, started in 2007 with The Dark Knight, when it was snubbed, and there was a lot of people who were upset about that and felt it should have gotten recognition that it didn't get.
Because that crossed the line a little, like it was an artsy, important movie with lots of social commentary, but it just happened to be in the framework of a Batman movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not going to happen. You get one of those a decade. You know, that doesn't happen very. The closest thing you could say recently would probably be Fury Road, which got nominated for Best Picture and it didn't win, but they were able to find room for it in their nominations. And I think that was appropriate.
Yeah. The irony is all of the early Best Pictures, like, you know, Gone with the Wind, Ben-Hur, like some of the classics, were the most successful movies of the
crowd
time.
Pleasers.
They were the popular movies of their day.
Yeah, you know? True. There is a growing divide. And I think this highlights a growing divide between the popular popcorn fare, like Fallout, Marvel, Star Wars, and more prestigious award bait things like The Shape of Water, Moonlight, Birdman. And we're kind of missing that middle ground that, like, this is for adults. This is for, like, this is a grown-up movie, but it still is accessible.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like comedies.
There isn't as many.
Comedy seems to be somewhat exempt from being Best Picture, just because, like, I feel like the last one I remember getting nominated, I could be wrong, I'm going off the top of the head, but I remember like Little Miss Sunshine, I think, was nominated, you know, which was a comedy. But a lot of times, like, they're kind of ghettoized too and put into their own category because of the genre, not because of the merits of the quality, you know.
I agree with that.
Okay, well, hey, by the way, before we wrap it, I just want to acknowledge, it's not that Annie fell asleep or got bored. She had to step away for a minute, but do not fear and don't hit stop. Annie will be back in the next segment. So she's had to step away for a minute. All right. Well, that'll do it for Slices. Stay tuned up next. Chris McClarney joins us. I'm in town for the bacon. You tell me how your spouse has been. Yeah, I'm in town, but my head is not. You're listening to Joywave. Song is Blast Off. Chris McClarney is a worship leader, songwriter, and a member of the Jesus Culture Music Collective. His new album, Breakthrough, is a theologically deep exploration of God's love, filled with praise anthems and worship ballads. We recently spoke with Chris about the album, the inspiration for some of its breakout tracks, and a lot more.
If for people that want a really good worship album, and that description talks about the theological themes in it, it's like, it's one of those that's like a meaty worship album. It has, it's like emotional and has all the stuff you want in like a worship album, but there's some real interesting lyrics going on there.
Here is our conversation with Chris McLarney.
Was there a point when this was a studio album and you made the decision to take it live, or was it always about the live performances?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked that. Well, I've done studio things in the past, and to be honest, I mean, I'll probably do it again, but it's just not my favorite, because at the core of what I do, I'm just a worship leader. I lead worship every Sunday at my church here in Franklin. And for me, the whole reason why I do it is that interaction with the crowd and seeing people connect to God in new ways. So this record was going to be a live record from the start. But there have been times where we've kind of toyed. Like the first time I did something with Jesus Culture, we talked about it being a studio record, but then quickly I just told them what I just told you, which was, I hate making studio records. Can we just do something live? So
that environment, though, can be so encouraging and empowering. But I'm wondering if there was a song on the album that you were maybe a little more nervous to perform live or to bring before an audience, that maybe felt more of a risk, maybe something a little more intimate or personal. Does one of the tracks stand out?
Well, on this record, the one I was nervous to sing was Crazy Love. And it's because I wasn't sold on calling it Crazy Love. It was my idea to begin with. So I came with this idea of, man, I want to write this song. I'd actually had it sitting in my phone for, gosh, like 5 years. I remember writing just this little line about how crazy God's love is, and recording it on my phone in a house we lived in like 2 houses ago. Wow. So it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I've just been carrying it around, kind of like, I love this idea, crazy, like God's love. It doesn't make a lot of sense because he's the creator of the universe, and yet he gave his only son and came down and died for us. And that just felt crazy, but I was very, like, every time I tried to write the song, I kept thinking to myself, you can't call God's love crazy. People are going to be mad about it. And it's like a joke. If you have to explain it, it's not good.
Right.
So I knew what I meant. And, every time I sat down to write it, it just felt like I was trying to over explain it. And I tried to change it to perfect love, and it didn't feel right. I tried to sing it as perfect love, and then I tried to sing it as, I forget all the iterations that we went into, but none of them felt right. And I kept coming back to, well, at the end of the day, I know what I'm singing. I know what I mean, and it feels right. So it was very personal, and I was very scared that people wouldn't understand it. But as soon as I started singing it, people kind of jumped on board, and I think they understood that I wasn't calling God crazy, and hopefully I don't get too many mean emails, but It is crazy. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. It's amazing. It's the best kind of crazy. There's nothing that can change.
You make Breakthrough the title track, and I feel like there has to be some reasoning behind that, because that's so many people's first impression. If you're coming into this album and, oh, there's the song from the title, and it kind of like pulls it out a little bit. So, yeah. So what was the reasoning for that? Like, why did you want Breakthrough to sort of stand for the entire album?
Part of it was, I had heard this a bunch in conversation. So, like I said, I'm a worship pastor at a church here in Franklin. And then on the road by myself and also with Jesus Culture, when you talk to people about where they're at, and I kept hearing this word where it was like, I just need a breakthrough. I feel like I'm stuck. I need a breakthrough. And people just kept saying it. And so coming into the record, at least the writing process for the record, one of the things I wanted to write about was breakthrough. And I didn't exactly know what that meant. So there was a little bit of exploration that had to happen in that. I mean, what does that mean? People say breakthrough, and what do they mean? Like, I sat down with some writers and kind of dove into, like, okay, breakthrough. You know, let's not make it about, you know, the kind of breakthrough where you're just depressed and sad and life is horrible and you need it to be good. But what if it's just the idea that there's more, that we need? I feel like every time I go back to my parents' house, I feel like a kid again. And sometimes you get stuck in those patterns in your everyday life where you come home and it's just a way that you act, and you feel like you can't break out of these. You're just stuck. You're stuck in patterns that aren't beneficial to your life. And so we sat down and we were just like, all right, so the song is just like, take me from where I've been into something new. You know, I need a breakthrough.
That was Chris McCarney. Stay tuned. Up next, it's our Listener of the Week. You're listening to A la Claire Ensemble. The song is Les FMO.
Oh, wow.
Dude, it is French hip-hop.
Can I just say, Cameron?
Love it.
I don't believe you. You made that up, didn't you?
This week's episode is also brought to you by Blue Apron. With chef-designed recipes and perfectly portioned fresh farm ingredients delivered right to your door, Blue Apron makes your dinner quick, easy, and oh yeah, insanely tasty. You can skip meal planning and get straight to cooking with Blue Apron. You can experience the joy of summer with mouth-watering favorite grilling recipes like chicken with barbecue sauce and juicy cheeseburgers with spicy slaw. Or choose from one of Blue Apron's exciting partnerships like with Master Chef and Bob's Burgers.
Bob's. Yeah. Can I say one thing? Like, I love all that stuff. Like, you can go online, you can check out recipes. There's some customization stuff. Me, I'm not gonna, I don't think better than a professional chef. I'm gonna stick on their plan. And I don't look. I open the box and it's like a little Christmas morning. What am I gonna be surprising? What kind of rigatoni or fancy arugula am I gonna be surprising my family with tonight? They're fantastic. And like I said, there's a real thrill out of opening that box and see what you got that week, especially if you're like me and you don't check beforehand.
Yeah,
it's a thrill ride if you fly blind like me. You know? You
can pick what you want.
You can pick. I like I said, they have great customization options. I think for people who are into MasterChef or those shows, it's awesome. But if you're like me, a food novice, who I wouldn't know what to pick. I don't know. This all looks fantastic. You can let them pick for you and open it like a big surprise mystery box.
Oh my gosh.
And it's so you get a rush. And you get a good meal. I mean, it's hard to beat that.
Hey, check out this week's menu and get your... I'm telling them the copy says, check out this week's menu. So don't do what Jesse does. You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free at blueapron.com/relevant. That's blueapron.com/relevant to get your first three meals free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Okay, it is time for...
You listen to the show, and it's time to get to know you. It's the Listener of the Week.
Our Listener of the Week. Okay, Jesse, who did you select this week?
Today's guest is Cindy. Cindy, I'm going to need you to pronounce your last name for us, though.
It's Agoncillo. Rhymes with pillow.
Agoncillo, there you go. Welcome to the show, Cindy Agoncillo.
Agoncillo rhymes with pillow. That's a very odd last name. Agoncillo rhymes with pillow.
That's our first fact, is no one knew how to say our last name.
Cindy, where are you calling us from?
I'm calling you from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
Mechanicsburg. Oh. What, are you a mechanic? Is it full of mechanics there? Is that where all mechanics come from?
Wow.
It used to be. I guess a lot of wagons, it would be like kind of the halfway point where wagons needed to be repaired, and so there are all these mechanics in the area, and they took care of them.
Yeah, I was about to say, the halfway point of what?
We are near Harrisburg, so it's like halfway between like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. So I don't know exactly where they were traveling, but it was a halfway point of somewhere.
All right, Jesse, let's go through her three facts. She tweeted us three facts about herself that caught your eye. What are they?
Okay, Cindy, I'm going to skip around here. I want to start with number two. That your old office. Okay, I'll say this. I was kind of on the fence with some of Cindy's, and Cindy, you and I have been corresponding on Twitter, and you offered clarity for number two, which really hooked me in, because originally said my old office was the subject of a TLC reality show. It's like, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. And then she said, "Here's a follow-up."
I've seen that show about an office in Pennsylvania.
The special was called Extreme Poodles. You got me, Cindy. You're in. Your office was the subject of a show called Extreme Poodles. What is the story there?
So the office that I worked for, it was a production company, and we produced trade shows and magazines for the dog grooming industry. So very specific audience. But at each of these trade shows, there would also be a dog grooming competition. And most of them
How are you awarding dog grooming? It seems like pretty straightforward. Yes. Like, is the dog groomed?
Wait, is it they do those crazy hair things where they put like, you know, a castle into somebody's hairdo and all that? They do that on dogs?
Yes. So that would be part of the creative grooming competition that happened at the very end of the conference. And so all of the competitors would be preparing for weeks on end, preparing like the color. So they would like dye the color into like the poodle's hair, and then live on stage, they would be cutting these designs into the hair, and each design had a theme. And then they had a short amount of time to do a presentation, whether that was like a skit or a song that had to do with the theme of their design.
I want to unpack a couple things. We're really fast through this. Okay, so one, people would pay money knowing that they're going to be in the audience to see a live dog haircut. Two, So you're telling me it's not really a grooming competition because the organizers quickly found out that that would be too boring. Yeah. So they tack on a comedy skit after the grooming.
I want to go to this.
Is it like those extreme cake things where like they can make the extreme wedding cake on the show, but then the last final tense moment is they have to carry it across the room and put it on the judge's table?
No, but that's even worse, Cameron. This is like, you got to make the extreme cake and then you have to see who can do the best backflip while running over the cake. Like, it's something completely unrelated to dog grooming. At least carrying the cake is related to baking cakes. Right. Like, you know, like that will actually come up in the cake baking. Yeah. If you're a professional dog hair cutter, it's rarely going to be a time. Okay. Now you and the dog, do your own rendition of who's on first. Like that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Why did they add that to the competition?
I think the skit was to appeal for the People's Choice Award. and so, which I think was applause based. And then there would be judges who would actually be critiquing like the technique and, but there was kind of like that tense moment of like a countdown, and then the judges would announce scissors down, where like at that moment you had to put your scissors down, put the hairspray down, step away from the dog, and then allow the judges to kind of walk through, take notes. And then they went into kind of that presentation portion, which was often politically incorrect, sometimes like borderline racist.
Oh, it's like a salty competition.
Definitely questionable. We're gonna need some details on.
I didn't know these were like blue skits. What was so politically incorrect about the dog?
I mean,
skits?
Jesse, come on. We can imagine that they do like a big Great Wall of China into the poodle, and then they come out in some sort of stereotypical garb and do some, you know. Racially,
that's racist. An actual example.
Yeah, okay, there you go. See?
How do you know that, Cameron?
Right. There's one. Hey, I think the groomer dressed up as a geisha and had like a Japanese like water bridge scene on the side of the dog.
Wow, wow. See, Annie, I have a wide variety of interests. You don't know me.
Yeah. You don't know me.
No, I was the guy at the end of the show, at the end of the competition, who went around and held my hand above each head so the crowd could applaud and we could choose the People's Choice Award. I interned there one summer.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. This is crazy. I got to know, you no longer work at the Extreme Poodles thing. Do you have a poodle? And are you passionate about dog grooming?
I have never owned a dog.
Okay.
So I was very happy to move on from that job because it wasn't something I was very passionate about. I think the straw that kind of broke the camel's back was when I was bit in the leg by the office dog. Ooh. And I decided that it was time to go.
It was a really bad day. The office dog bit her and then performed a really racist skit in front of the
I can't hear. This is, I can't work here.
Okay. All right. So, I'm going to go to number three real quick, Cindy, because we kind of went back and forth on this one. But you came up with a pretty great story. I shared it with Chandler beforehand. Chandler, you were in agreement that we need more information on this.
Yes.
Cindy went on a mission trip to Ecuador with Joy Williams from the Civil War. So that's interesting. But they also performed a drama about an evil magician in the city streets.
What?
An evil magician?
All in the hopes of bringing people to Christ.
Wow. Well, how old were you and Joy Williams?
I was 16, so this was about like 15 years ago, and this was probably like in the heyday of her like contemporary Christian music career.
Okay, pre-Civil Wars, pre-post-Civil Wars, just CCM. Okay, I gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
And so this was a missions trip with Focus on the Family with Brio Magazine.
I used to write for Brio. Rackham. I love Susie Schellenberger.
This is like CCM 90s bingo.
Listen, I won the messiest room contest in 10th grade and got a jewelry organizer.
Wow.
Thank you very much, Brio.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a pretty good team. We had the Brio Girl of the Year, who was on our team, and Joy was one of our team leaders, and she was kind of like a surprise. We didn't know that she was going to be there.
What made her the Brio Girl of the Year? You're blowing past all this interesting stuff, Cindy.
I always wanted to be the Brio. Yes, Carl, I wanted it. Did you want to be it too, Cindy? I always wanted to be Brio Girl of the Year.
What constitutes Brio Girl of the Year?
There's a whole like application process where you like send in like a questionnaire about like your favorite Bible verse and you know, all the your church involvement and a headshot. And I'm pretty sure I applied like multiple times. I was like, okay, this is going to be the year, but it never was.
Me too, yeah. Cindy. Me too, girl.
I'm sorry.
So, but you at least got to hang out with the girl of the year. Did she really seem like the girl of the year? Or when you got to know her behind the headshot and the Bible Q&A, you're like, she's not the girl of the year.
This is definitely not the Brio girl of the year.
I mean, she's pretty solid. We're still Facebook friends, but yeah. It was a good person to meet.
Let's get her up.
That's great. All right, and then the last one.
Oh, hold on. Can I ask one? Why was the street drama about a magician? I got to know that real quick.
Okay, so it was called Spellbound.
Oh yeah.
And it featured a battle between this evil magician and the toy maker's son.
Oh yeah.
And so there's like this kind of like Toyland.
This is a classic.
And
it really cuts through the language barrier with the gospel, obviously.
No, like I know this because there was a guy named, the ministry who made Spellbound is based in Tulsa. And and when I was in college in Tulsa, like that guy, his name is Tom something. He ran this like drama video.
I know his daughter.
It was like Spellbound and the Toymaker's son or apprentice or whatever was like their big thing. And it,
Toymaker's Dream, right?
Yeah, there you go. That's hilarious. Small world. Okay, and lastly, I misread this one. Okay. So read it the way she wrote it, and I'll tell you what I misunderstood about it, Jesse.
Oh, that she bartered her way into a nationally televised award show.
That's an interesting story. I want to hear it. I thought it said she once bartended her way into a nationally televised award show, which would have been a way better story.
Maybe she did both. Maybe she bartered her way in with alcohol.
Tyler Huckabee, you love to barter. This is your kind of story.
I'm on pins and needles. I can't wait.
Yeah. So this happened at one of the conferences, the dog grooming conferences. So we had a show in Pasadena, California.
Amazing.
And that year, next door to our conference was the NAACP Image Awards. And Anthony Anderson was the host, and his like trailer was just across the sidewalk from our registration table. And this woman walked in and she asked if she could get into the trade show because she really loves dogs and wanted to see what it was all about. And I told her, you know, well, we're not really open to the public. It costs $10 to get in if you want to pay the entry fee. And she told us that she was in charge of the seat fillers. And so I said, if you can get us into the award show, we'll give you a ticket to the trade show and you can just kind of walk in and you won't have to pay the registration fee. And so she kind of checked in with like her people and said, okay, yeah, we can do that. So we let her into the show and she came back with two tickets, one for me and one for one of my coworkers. And we arrived like just as Oprah was getting out of her limo and we got to see Stevie Wonder perform in tribute of Nelson Mandela. And I walked out behind Ed Asner. So I think it was a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
for
I think you won that,
a
that one.
Technically free trade show that we charge people $10 to get into.
Yeah, I was going to say, I appreciate that this woman was willing to put her job on the line. She's so frugal for a $10 registration.
You saw Oprah, Stevie Wonder, Anthony Anderson. She saw dogs get groomed. I mean, I think you won that transaction.
And some good sketches.
It was a pretty good deal.
She saw dogs get groomed and numerous racist dog skits.
Right. It's a lucky life. It's a lucky life. And she went on a Brio mission trip.
Yep.
It's the best.
Thanks for listening. Cindy, we've seen you on social media for years. Thanks for listening as long as you have been. And we're glad you're our listener of the week this week.
And this is actually the second Relevant podcast network show that my name has been on or that I've been on. Because I won the contest to bring Eddie and the New Activist to my town. And so we got to host him here. I work at Messiah College. And so we got to have him here and record the show.
That's awesome.
On our campus.
All right. Well, Cindy, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Cindy.
Well, many thanks to Chris McClarney for joining us on today's show. Remember, his new album, Breakthrough, is out now. And you can follow him on Twitter at C McClarney, E-Y. And, you know, according to Annie, super hilarious.
Yeah. Very funny. Yeah. I don't know if his, I don't know if that comes through in his worship music or not. I cannot. That would be great. Maybe it's going over my head.
He has like, a lot of people know this. He has like a Weird Al style worship parody album. That it's very good. It's very good. It's very sacrilegious. It's straight up blasphemy. But
he's really popular in the dog grooming circuit.
It's not PC. Yeah. It's not PC. No. Put the kids to bed before you turn this one on. But,
this is Chris McClarney after dark, if you catch my drift.
Hey, remember Wednesday show, we told you all about Impact Week, which is coming up August 27th. We partnered with Bright Peak Financial. They're going to be every day that week, we will be taking on a new goal, building wells with charity water or freeing people who've been trafficked through like A21. And every day we're going to be going live. We're going to be having guests. We're going to be doing stunts. And we want you to join us. Bright Peak Financial is joining us, and they will be accelerating the giving that's happening. They will be participating financially as well and multiplying the impact of the funds that we raise those days. So join us for Impact Week. It's coming up August 27th. If you want to find out more, you can get all the info at relevantmagazine.com/impactweek. Go check it out. Join us for real. We want to make a difference that week.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's an awesome thing. Thanks also to our show sponsors for making the episode possible. ZipRecruiter, you can try for free at ZipRecruiter.com/relevant to post a job and start getting some great candidates. Also, thanks to Blue Apron. You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free at BlueApron.com/relevant. Well, on that note, we will wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Chandler Strang.
Tyler Huckabee.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Annie F. Downs.
We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from The Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
So when you try to wash it off, you'll remember that you can't forget.
Just go punch that ballistic dummy as hard as you can right in the stomach. Been like, ah, boom.
Relevant Podcast Network.